There's really two ways that we can experience Tisha B'Av. Either we can try to get through the fast, or we can try to have the fast get through us. We're here this morning because, as a tzibur, we want the latter. We're allowed to be human. We're allowed to check our watches as the afternoon goes by. And none of us will be upset when we can eat. But at the same time, if we're fasting anyway, we want that the day should be meaningful, that the fast should go through us. Just to make it through the fast, we could all do on our own. But to make the fast go through us, that's something that we need to do together as a tzibur. And it's not easy. We all know that. To mourn for something that we never even knew existed is a very, very difficult thing. And we read stories about people from previous generations, and it seems like just that, from another world. True. But I could tell you that there are a lot of people, maybe not all of us, not necessarily me, but there are a lot of people who really, really feel it, even now. I'll never forget a story from a number of years ago when we lived in Baltimore. Every year around the 9 days, and then for Tisha B'Av, he would stay in our shul, there was a Ger Chassid from Bnei Brak, named Avram Motcha Berkovich. He used to come collecting. He wasn't collecting for himself. He was quite successful in wholesale and retail shoe salesman. But he had started a tzedakah organization to help victims of terror, because a few years before that, he had been coming from a business meeting in Tel Aviv, and he was standing in a corner when there had been a pigua, when there had been a huge explosion. And he was miraculously saved. I don't even know if he had a scratch on him. But he was so shaken by that experience, and he was so grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for saving him, that he took upon himself to create his kind of version of the One Family Fund, of giving out things that are necessary, material goods, money, other help, to victims of terror. And he always used to collect in America this time of year. And Dafka, the week of Tisha B'Av and Tisha B'Av, he would be in Baltimore. So once he told me about how a few years before that he was in a store when an elder yid, an old, somewhat impoverished-looking Hasidish Jew, came into the store and he asked him if he could buy a pair of his fanciest, most expensive shoes. He was a little bit surprised by this, didn't seem to go with the person who walked in the door, but the markup on the more expensive shoes is significant. So he wasn't certainly going to turn down the sale. But what was more surprising, as he said, it was more of a mud nazach than the fact that the person asked for the fanciest shoes, was that after he received the shoes, he then said, I'd like another pair. Could I have a pair of chas v'shulam shichin? Could I have a pair of chas v'shalom shoes? So he didn't even know what that meant. He says, don't you, chas v'shulam shichin. Something that wasn't leather. So he said, what are you talking about? You want, can you afford nicer? You can't afford. He says, let me explain something to you. He says, Mirtz Hashem, in a few days, Mashiach is going to come. And then this year, Tisha B'Av is going to be the greatest yontif. You don't think that I'm going to have the nicest shoes possible to welcome the Melech HaMashiach, to be there for the yontif? On the other hand, he said, no, it's possible, Rachmana Litzlan. Maybe Mashiach won't come. The Jew also has to be prepared. And then for just in case, kulei hai, I need my chas v'shulam shichin. That's a Jew who lives Tisha B'Av, who really understood what it means to mourn something and to feel its absence. Most of us a very hard time reaching that level, even if it's a level among people who are in our generation, in our time. Most of us in this room have never lived one day of our lives without having completely free and unfettered access to the Kotel. How could we relate to something that was so deprived. That's actually also a halachic question. The shir we're going to give after kinos, we'll discuss whether it's nachem or other related things. How do the events of our generation and recent generations affect the way we halachically even mourn for Yerushalayim and mourn for the Beis Hamikdash? But however you answer that question, clearly there's supposed to be something that we still miss. So what I found at least helpful for me is, even if it's hard for us to miss something that we never had, Chazal, as you know, took great pains to identify what the causes of the Churban were. And even if we have a hard time relating to the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, it is easier, not easy, but easier to relate to the causes of the Churban, causes which are self-evident to us to be problematic. And at least if we can get in touch with that, if we can focus and identify with what was Goreim, the Churban, that is certainly a significant part of the Avoda of Tisha B'Av. The Gemara in Yuma that you're all familiar with mentions that there was very different causes to the respective Churbanos. That whereas in the first Beis HaMikdash, it was a rampant violation of the cardinal three Averos of Avodah Zarah, Ritzicha, and Gilui Arayos, when it came to the second Beis HaMikdash, it was Sinas Chinam, unwarranted hatred between Jews, which destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And I have a confession, or not only a confession, I have almost a rhetorical question, an observation. I think that most of us, when we read this Gemara, we don't really believe it. Really? Hayitachin? Really? Sinas Chinam? Something that's just part of what it means to be a Jew. That's what destroyed the Beis HaMikdash? Come on. Sinas Chinam, as the Gemara itself says, is Shgula, the Gimel Averos? Really? How many of us deep down have a hard time really buying that? And the answer is obvious, as I mentioned, because it is so much part of the air that we breathe. It's hard to believe that it could be considered so terrible and so shocking that it could even have destroyed a Beis HaMikdash. The same way idolatry, murder, rampant immorality could have done. So I've thought about this for many years, and last year I was actually in New Jersey for Tisha B'Av, and I had a pshat there which I explained with a mashal, which I found just this year, Baruch Shekivanti, to an insight of the Maharal. I didn't know the Maharal last year, but I'm happy this year I found it. It's in Netzach Yisrael in Perek Dalet. And the Maharal explains that when the Gemara says that these were the respective causes of the two Churbanos, what it's also hinting at is what was the positive mechanism and spiritual energy which had previously sustained and enabled the Beis HaMikdash. Once you understand what gave life to the Beis HaMikdash, says the Maharal, then you understand why it's specific Averos in specific generations which had the ability to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So he explains that in the first Beis HaMikdash, Haisos Shechina Beinehem, V'zu Malas HaMikdash HaRishon. We know Chazal speak about in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, in the Medrash, all of the miracles, even the daily miracles, amazing, amazing miracles that took place to give testimony to the presence, the constant presence of the Shekhinah in the first Beis HaMikdash. Pshuto kamashma, when we think of a Beis HaMikdash, when we close our eyes, whatever image comes into our mind, we think of something really, really holy, and somehow God's home in this world. So says the Maharal, given that, once we did Averos, which made the Shekhinah's presence incompatible, the Shekhinah cannot exist, cannot coexist with Ritzicha, cannot coexist with Avodah Zarah or Gilui Arayos. So then, once the Shekhinah left, Mamela, caused by those three Averos, the Beis HaMikdash lost its force shield, as it were, and it was nothing for the enemies to destroy. That was the first Beis HaMikdash. Aval malas mikdasheni, continues the Maral. Haya machmas Yisrael atzma. He points out, as we know from many sources, that the presence of the Shekhinah was not fully manifest in the second Beis HaMikdash as it had been in the first, and says the Maral, whatever level of Shekhinah was present was insufficient. It was not enough to give life, to give energy to the building and the sustaining of the second Beis HaMikdash. Rather, it was Yisrael Atzma. What does that mean? It was the Jewish people themselves who gave life to the second Beis HaMikdash. He said, Dabar ze barur, ki Yisrael heim misachdim al yidei Beis HaMikdash shahaya lehem. Because the whole purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is not just to make us closer to the Rabbanu Shel Olam, it's supposed to help us be closer to each other. How so? After all, he said, there's only one Kohen Gadol, Mizbeach Echad, Nesru Habamos, Shelo Hayu Pirud V'chiluk B'Yisrael. By having that central spiritual focus, the idea wasn't just that all hearts were on Yerushalayim or on the Rabbanu Shel Olam. It was that everyone had to come together to the same address, to the same leadership. There wasn't, as the old and horrible joke goes, the Beis HaMikdash you went to and the Beis HaMikdash you didn't go to. There was only one. There was only one Kohen Gadol. There was only one address. And that unity of purpose also brought together unity of mind and heart and gave true achdus to the Jewish people. Al yedei Beis HaMikdash heim uma achas shelema. They became one full people. So if the whole essence, if the whole kiyum of the Beis HaMikdash, the spiritual energy, is fueled by the achdus of the Jewish people, so then says the Maral, now we can finally understand. Memela. Mipnei kach nechrav habayis b'shvil sinas chinam. After all, once you have a chiluk of their hearts, hayu mechulakim v'lo hayu ru'uyim l'mikdash asher hu hitachdut Yisrael. If the whole thing was the achdus which created the mikdash, so once there was a period levavos, once there was sinas chinam, memela, the second Beis HaMikdash withered. It was this idea what I had in mind when I gave the mashal that the three averos were like a wrecking ball, which are so powerful, so horrible, that they could in fact come and smash the Beis HaMikdash to smithereens. Sinas chinam are like termites. They eat away and hollow out the Beis HaMikdash from the inside. They're not as powerful objectively, but if you give it enough time, there's no more foundation. And then memela, there's no more Beis HaMikdash. I recall a few years ago when we first came to Eretz Yisrael, we were invited to the bar mitzvah of a son of someone who's in this room today. And the party, the Sudas mitzvah, was in Yerushalayim at the Beit HaRav, at Rav Kook House, or Rav Kook Museum. It was a very beautiful bar mitzvah, very beautiful simcha. Our first bar mitzvah celebration living in Eretz Yisrael. So even for us, we felt a certain connection. No one gave us presents, but we felt a little bit like the Balei Simcha. And we got a ride with another couple from the neighborhood. And when we left, it was in the Geula Meir Sharam neighborhood, if you know that's where Rav Kook lived. And after one or two turns right out of the hall, we ran into a humongous fire in the middle of the street. It wasn't an accidental fire. Surrounding the drums filled with fire and billowing smoke up to the heavens were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of very obviously religious Jews chanting, screaming, and every now and then throwing more garbage and other things into the fire to keep it going. I forget exactly what they were protesting. It doesn't really matter. But Yaakov, my son, who then was just 9 years old, was in the car with us, and he looked at me and he said, Abba, why are religious Jews burning Yerushalayim? How do you answer a question like that? Is there an answer? Why are Jews burning Yerushalayim? I wanted to cry with the end of his innocence. But that's what it's come to. We don't need other people to burn Yerushalayim. We don't need other people to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Because with Sinas Chinam we could do it all ourselves. And let's be clear, despite our obvious instincts, it's not just them. We can be just as guilty. I think public mass fires may be the expertise of particular parts of Klal Yisrael, but even if that may not be our thing, it doesn't mean that we're any less guilty often of Sinas Chinam. So let me just end with one last idea, which I think hopefully will bring this home and hopefully focus our attention for the rest of the morning. And it's a comment which really hits home, especially today, from the Arizal, the sainted Arizal, who explains the deeper meaning of a well-known pasuk in Parsha Shoftim. Ki yipale mimcha davar lemishpat. If you wonder, if you're confused about what's going on in the world, bein dam ledam, you don't understand why the world treats Jewish blood different than other blood. How come when Jewish blood runs in the streets, there's no problem? Someone else gets a nick on their finger, the UN has to convene the Security Council. It doesn't matter if it's in Yerushalayim or Tel Aviv, France or Bulgaria, Jewish blood is cheap and everyone knows it. As the great historian Deborah Lipstadt wrote just a week or two ago, an article I'm sure many of you saw, explaining the inexplicable and cruel response of the IOC, of the Olympic Committee, not willing even this year after 40 years to have any public recognition of the Israeli soldiers that were killed in Munich. She writes a scholarly article, and Deborah Lipstadt, the world famous historian, says there's only one explanation to the world: Jewish blood is cheap. Ki yipale mimcha davar bein dam ledam. We don't understand. Why does it have to be bein din ledin? How come the world has different standards of judgment for Jews and everybody else? Different standards of morality for Israel and everybody else? America, the Allies, England, they can carpet bomb at will. But the Jews, one little violation, went down the wrong alley without first giving a Miranda warning. It's an international incident. Yipale mimcha bein din ledin. Bein nega lenega. We have negayim, there are problems in our community. But somehow, if the person who stole is wearing a yarmulke, that's on the front page. The guy who isn't Jewish, who stole 900 million, 10,000 times more. So that can get a mention, but it's not on the paper day after day. A Jew? A frum Jew problems in our community? Yes, we're no different than every other community. Except for the press coverage of our problems somehow seem to always be different. Yipale mimcha davar. We don't understand why is everything so different. Says the Arizal, the pasuk continues and gives the answer. How does the pasuk continue? We have a few Bali Kriya in the audience. Divrei rivos bisharecha. It's all because of machlokas. It's our fault. It's because of our sinas chinam, because of our lack of avas Yisrael. Divrei rivos b'sharecha. But here's the most painful part. So what's the solution? The Torah gives us a solution. When you see these problems, ki yipali mim chadavar, what are you supposed to do? The pasuk concludes, v'kamtav alis al amakom, asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha bo. You're supposed to go to Yerushalayim. You're supposed to go to the Mikdash, because just as the Maharal had mentioned independently, the whole idea of Yerushalayim, the Mokum Shinasu Yisrael Chaverim, Yerushalmi and Baba Kama, the whole idea of the Beis HaMikdash, especially Bayis Sheni, it's the place which brings Achdus, Kohen Echad, Mizbeach Echad, Bayis Echad, Am Echad. So if that's supposed to be the solution, and even in Yerushalayim we're setting fires, If we even have sinas chinam enough to destroy a Beis HaMikdash, so then what hope do we have? Then we really have taken the one lifeline that the Pasuk gave us and thrown that back in the Rabbanu Shalom's face. Then we have nothing. Conclude on a, not positive, but on a proactive note. I mentioned the Rav Kook house before. So Rav Kook, certainly in his life, was no stranger to unfortunate sinas chinam and machlokes. But as we know, very famously, he never did anything, even when he had talmidim who were pushing him, he never did anything to strike back, to publicly point out the weaknesses or deficiencies or criticize those who were doing much more of the same to him. But he did have one approach, which is a very famous quote included in the work Arpalei Tohar, and it's worth ending this introduction on this note, hopefully as a chizuk for all of us. He said there, "The purely righteous do not complain about evil. Rather, they add justice. They don't complain about heresy. Rather, they add faith. They don't complain about ignorance, but they add wisdom." And I would add, based on what we've seen, they don't complain about machlokes and sinas chinam, but rather they add avas chinam, avas Yisrael, and shalom between Jews.